Hey everyone, welcome back to the Institute on Science for Global Policies podcast, The Forum, where science comes to socialize. I'm Daniela, along with my two co-hosts, Aubrey and Cleo.
Hey guys, it's Cleo here. Thanks for tuning in.
And this is Aubrey. I've actually been looking forward to today's episode topic for a while now, getting back to my biology roots today.
If you at home want to join the conversation, then make sure to tweet us at ISGP Forum using the hashtag ISGP Forum. As always, you can follow us on Facebook by searching ISGP's The Forum.
Today, we're going to discuss a timely topic that's pretty familiar to the forum, but we'll actually take a relatively new approach to the scenario. The topic of the day is synthetic biology regulation, but we'll specifically be discussing the new developments of xenobiology and the regulatory system's inability to stay up to speed.
We'll also be discussing the importance of regulatory institutions to keep these synbio developments exciting, rather than make the topic even more controversial than it is today, which we'll elaborate on a little later in the episode.
So, the paper being discussed today was written by Dr. Marcus Schmidt and is titled Safeguarding the Genetic Firewall with Xenobiology.
Dr. Schmidt, the founder of Biofaction KG in Vienna, Austria, wrote this policy position paper for the December 2012 ISGP conference, 21st Century Borders and Synthetic Biology, Focus on Responsibility and Governance, which was held in Tucson, Arizona.
So in order to even begin the conversation about synthetic biology regulations, we may first want to be sure we're all in agreement about what synthetic biology and xenobiology even are, even though I'm sure we're all aware, right guys?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. But let's just go over it, you know, for the audience sake.
All right. Well, according to Dr. Schmidt, xenobiology is the science of biological systems that are made out of alternative biochemical structures. It's a subfield of synthetic biology referring to the synthesis and manipulation of biological devices and systems.
Right. Actually, xenobiology derives from the Greek word xenos, which means stranger or guest. Xenobiology describes novel biological systems that are not found in nature and differ from the canonical DNA RNA 20 amino acid system.
Yep, the difference is that most synthetic biologists try to convert biology into an engineering discipline by redesigning existing natural biological systems for useful purposes. In other words, synthetic biologists are using genes found in nature or designing new ones that closely resemble natural genes.
But some bioengineers, however, are not happy with the biochemical substrates found in nature and would rather construct new forms of life. This is what we call xenobiology. These new forms of life have no counterpart in the existing world.
The synthesis of alternative biological structures focuses mostly on redesigning the three universal molecules, DNA, RNA, and proteins. And let's do a quick Bio 101 review sesh for you so we're all refreshed on the basics of biological structures. DNA, or deoxyribonucleic acid, if you're feeling technical, is the genetic code found in each of your cells and each of the cells of other living things that dictates how an organism is built and regulated. It's the DNA sequence that essentially tells you what proteins should be made in the organism and when they should be made. Also, DNA's double-stranded structure, yeah, this is all coming back to you now, right? It's held together by base pairing. Essentially, all you need to know for our purposes today is that DNA subunits are called nucleotides, and four nucleotides exist: adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine, or A, T, C, and G. A always pairs with T in the double-stranded structure, and C always pairs with G. That is base pairing. Whew, okay, I think that'll do for now.
Okay, so now that Aubrey successfully flaunted her biology background,
No, really, I think that's all really necessary background for today's topic, though.
I know, I'm just kidding. It becomes relevant right now, actually. Recent research shows, for example, that all subunits of the DNA molecule, namely the ATCG base, deoxyribose sugar molecule, and phosphate group, can be replaced by alternative chemical structures. A DNA molecule with three instead of only the two natural ATCG base pairs has been made, and other carbon ring sugar structures, such as hexose or cyclohexenyl, were incorporated to give rise to HNA and CENA, respectively.
And for these new non-DNA, non-RNA molecules, the term XNA is used, which stands for xenonucleic acids.
And now for part two of today's Bio 101 lecture, Proteins. Proteins, as I mentioned before, are encoded by DNA molecules. They're made up of 20 amino acids and have a wide variety of functions within the body, ranging from providing structural support to cells, all the way to facilitating chemical reactions in those same cells. Now back to today's subject. It's actually been shown that it's possible to incorporate non-natural amino acids into proteins. So in this case, they're made up of 21 or 22 instead of 20 amino acid building blocks.
First attempts have been made to develop an altered life-supporting complement of proteins that are made up of amino acids with the opposite chirality of natural amino acids.
Right. So what this means is that if a molecule is chiral, there are two different forms it can take. It has the same atoms in each form, but the two different versions are essentially mirror images of each other. A great example of chirality in the real world is actually gloves. Two gloves look exactly the same, but they're mirror images of one another. A left-handed glove can't be worn on your right hand, and vice versa. In the body, chiral versions of the same molecule can have wildly different impacts, and that's why this concept is often exploited in the development of pharmaceuticals.
These amino acid chirality experiments that Daniela mentioned have been mainly carried out in vitro, or in other words, outside of a living organism. Very few, if any, living organisms exist with an altered chiral biochemistry. However, sooner or later, we will see the construction of new-to-nature or xenobiological systems that are increasingly different than their natural counterparts.
So, besides creating a world straight out of the movie Avatar, what is xenobiology doing for us?
Well, Dee, with its potential to reveal fundamental information about biology and the origin of life and even life on other planets, xenobiology is a potentially transformative technology.
Right. And I get that this all may sound a little new, scary, and complicated, but just stick with us here. The reason for such research is that xenobiology provides three main opportunities.
First, and not to sound overly dramatic or anything, but xenobiology provides us with a better understanding of the origin of life. Looking at all the possible alternatives to life as we know it, like the different variants of XNA, the hundreds of amino acids not used in proteins, the universal genetic code, or the selection of one type of chirality, all allows us to explore several questions, such as why was our basic chemical makeup evolutionarily successful while all these others were not?
Or we could ask whether our evolutionarily successful biochemistry was more robust than the others, and thus more likely to emerge under the conditions of early Earth. Or did its dominance occur by chance? And is there room for an artificial biodiversity?
The second opportunity provided by xenobiology is the opportunity to develop more efficient industrial biotechnology production systems. Although Earth has experienced billions of years of evolutionary trial and error, nature has yet to test all possible biological systems.
This means that xenobiology could be used to find new and more efficient biological functions than those provided by nature. This approach could be promising in efforts to design a new class of chemically diversified biocatalyst for industrial, medical, and environmental uses. Industrial strains of organisms with a fundamentally different genetic code could suddenly be immune to natural viruses, limiting their susceptibility.
And the third opportunity provided by xenobiology addresses our main issue today, a solution to upcoming biosafety challenges. Dr. Schmidt argues that xenobiological systems could be used as a fundamentally new biosafety system. Since these xenobiological systems would not be capable of trading genetic info with natural organisms, a process called horizontal gene transfer, these organisms couldn't receive pathogenic characteristics or antibiotic resistance from the nefarious organisms we currently face. The separation between natural and novel organisms genetically would really behave like a genetic firewall.
So let's summarize the three benefits of xenobiological research. The first point addresses deep philosophical questions around understanding the origin of life. Meanwhile, the last two points deal with real-world implications for society, economy, industry, policy, and the environment.
The use of xenobiology in industry, however, will primarily depend on whether it will be safe to employ.
Right. The regulation of xenobiology, especially with respect to the safety of its procedures, its impact on human and environmental health and public safety, and its toxicity presents significant challenges.
And the main issue is that while progress is being made in the symbiosphere to make biology easier to engineer, safety regulations and risk assessment practices are not keeping up with the pace of developments. They'll soon be rendered outdated and inadequate to handle upcoming developments of synthetic biology functions, organisms, and products.
The hypothetical exposure of deeply engineered or novel synthetic microorganisms to society introduces the possibility of their intentional or accidental interaction with the environment. At the time of this debate, containment systems, risk assessment, and safety regulations designed for genetic engineering in the 1980s and 90s for the purpose of limiting the spread of genetically engineered organisms and their introduced traits were still largely viewed by regulators and scientists as sufficient for application to contemporary synthetic biology products.
Progress in synthetic biology is expected to result in staggering growth in the number of new biological functions and modified organisms with useful purposes.
And these developments will sooner or later pose a significant problem for established biosafety and risk assessment practices.
Right. A technological development that is outpacing its safety regulation could result in 1. A series of unintended consequences and unforeseen accidents. 2. A legal bottleneck for further product development because of a lack of clear legal and regulatory framework. And 3. Increasing public resistance towards synthetic organisms if they are not considered quote-unquote safe enough.
So do we have any ideas for safety mechanisms that can provide the solution to the problems here?
Well, xenobiology is talking about completely new organisms. There would obviously be a need to delineate specific guidelines for physical containment here. Whether those guidelines are sparse or super detailed, they'd surely be different than containment parameters for, I don't know, genetically modified carrots.
Some ideas have been proposed in the past, such as so-called suicide circuits.
Wait, suicide circuits?
Yeah. Essentially, these are cases in which the cell or organism would be killed if it escaped outside of its intended environment. Now, this doesn't mean that if the scary new organism escapes, the scientists can simply push a button and destroy it. It is rather an intricate process entailing a logic circuit, or a system that makes a decision based on multiple inputs.
Circuits can include genes that are made to detect certain molecules. If the right molecules are present, the genes initiate production of a protein that stimulates apoptosis, or programmed cell death, hence the name suicide circuits.
But unfortunately, trials of these circuits have thus far failed to provide a sufficient degree of safety for industrial, medical, or environmental use.
So, although what you're informing us about is interesting, we're still left with the same problem and are in need of other solutions.
Well, yeah, I guess. Actually, decisive and collaborative action by scientists, policymakers, and other stakeholders is crucial at this point to address the medium to long-term biosafety risks of synthetic biology.
And to answer your question from a minute or two ago, Aubrey, no strategy beyond the decades-old approach to biological containment is currently envisioned, despite significant investment in synthetic biology that have made biological life in general easier to engineer.
Well, actually, let's go back to the third opportunity of xenobiology that we just mentioned. Dr. Schmidt does suggest that xenobiology may provide a new set of tools to establish an innovative solution to future biosafety challenges.
And that would be?
The genetic firewall we just talked about, Silly. The idea is that making our genetically engineered organisms completely incapable of genetically interacting with other organisms by, you know, giving them completely different genetic material would provide a stronger safety framework than would a series of small ad hoc fixes to a set of regulations designed for genetic engineering.
Ultimately, I guess it comes down to actually using xenobiology as a way to provide a genetic firewall to improve biosafety.
That doesn't end the story, guys. Constructing a xenobiological organism and a genetic firewall is a very difficult task, and we have to recognize that doing so is well beyond the current capabilities of science and engineering.
Not only is it difficult, but it might provide hardly any return on investment over the short-term future, since the establishment of a xenobiological toolkit will take some time before reaching a level that is remotely comparable to bioengineering via traditional methodologies.
Okay, let's try to stay optimistic, guys. You do have a point. But over the middle and long term, the investment will pay off, both in terms of increased efficiency of biotechnological processes and in terms of providing a safe and reliable mechanism that avoids unintended consequences, accidents, and legal uncertainties.
Well, in any case, policymakers do need to realize that these developments will render the current regulatory framework designed for genetic engineering completely outdated in a not so distant future.
It's also true that the response to faster technological developments can take one of two forms. There could be inert, ad hoc, tactical adaptations of obsolete safety regulations and risk assessment without a clear strategy for evolving with the evolving technology.
Or there could be a collaborative approach that leads to a strategic vision of how to deal with upcoming safety challenges of synthetic biology. Adaptations may still be needed, but this time they would be based on a solid framework that recognizes the outlook of impending scientific advances.
And this genetic firewall approach will only improve industrial processes and establish safer biosystems if collaborative action amongst international scientists, policymakers, and other stakeholders is taken.
Right. Instead of resuscitating a limited concept of genetic suicide circuits, scientists, safety experts, and policymakers must discuss radical innovations as a strategic answer to upcoming biosafety challenges. The pros and cons of xenobiology and the support and deployment of the genetic firewall need to be discussed among international stakeholders.
For sure, considering that I'm sure most people haven't even heard of xenobiology, even though, based on the context we've given it today, I'm sure they'd be pretty interested, either from a practical standpoint or from pure curiosity. I mean, we are talking about creating non-Gattaca organisms here.
This decisive action to radically improve the outlook of biosafety is required from policymakers in both Europe and the United States. Those concerned with governance of synthetic biology must support the technical development of a genetic firewall, so the development of the actual science, and prepare a framework to regulate said firewall.
But this may prove a bit tricky.
Well, of course, the discussions surrounding xenobiology regulation will absolutely be tricky, seeing as the technology itself is such a complicated matter. But that's what makes it so exciting, isn't it?
Love the enthusiasm, Dee, but I feel like Aubrey is referring to a specific issue, making it particularly tricky. Am I right?
Well, the fact is that concerns about public safety and security require a level of governmental xenobiology control that may not be welcomed by everyone.
Really? But who would argue against safety regulations?
Well, safety regulations are sometimes referred to as access barriers by those who prioritize innovation. The more regulations, the slower the technological development. But lesser regulations, of course, increase the risk of unintended consequences.
Exactly. Those who wish to have open access to the technology and promote its uninhibited, rapid innovation could argue against the development of strict regulations.
Well, I would say that given the public concern over recent advances in genetic engineering, discussions about the benefits and risks of xenobiology is critical to shaping effective policy.
Speaking of the public, why don't we include our listeners in the discussion right here? We hope you have a better understanding of synthetic biology controversies and opportunities after our discussion today, especially those regarding xenobiology specifically.
I know we threw a lot of tricky information at you, so make sure to send us any questions you may have via our many social media outlets.
Not only questions, but make sure to have your voice heard and weigh in on how you feel about the topic.
Do you think the use of xenobiology is crucial to help understand the origins of life?
And should we be supporting the development of a genetic firewall to increase biosafety?
Or what kind of regulatory framework would have to be developed for you to trust and support for the development of xenobiological research?
Tweet us your answers at ISGB Forum and use the hashtag ISGB Forum, or catch us on our Facebook page.
Well, thank you for tuning in and socializing with science today. We'll catch you next time, right here on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.